Behind the Knife, the surgery podcast, where we take a behind-the-scenes intimate look at surgery from leaders in the field.
All right, welcome to Behind the Knife. We're very excited to be hosting our first Behind the Knife debate. Today we'll be discussing an article that's been getting quite a bit of attention online and even a write-up in the New York Times and a lot of surgeons debating on Twitter. And it's the antibiotic therapy versus appendectomy for treatment of uncomplicated acute appendicitis.
Yeah, and all those surge tweeters out there know that the Twitter world was on fire talking about this, and prominent surgeons from all over the country that are represented on Twitter were giving their opinions on this, and some of them were actually quite surprising, and it was a really fun debate to be involved in. And it was actually Luke Selby at LV Selbs who brought this up and said, "Hey, Behind the Knife, I hope you're going to get an episode out about this." And because of him prompting us, we decided to put this debate together for you guys. And we also had a few other Twitter followers that were giving us some information and had some really neat stuff at Skeptical Scalpel. If you guys don't follow him on Twitter, he has always fascinating opinions. And he's got a really good blog, and he's at Skeptical Scalpel. And then Dr. Justin Dimmick of Michigan was very vocal also on this topic of appendicitis. And so we really appreciated his input.
And as most of our listeners will know, this is the Appendicitis Acuta trial, which is a multi-center, open-label, non-inferiority study looking at antibiotic therapy versus appendectomy for the treatment of uncomplicated acute appendicitis. Today we have Dr. Matthew Martin debating one side. He's going to take the pro-antibiotics stance, and Dr. Wright, who's going to take the pro-surgery stance. Dr. Martin is the Trauma Medical Director and Chief of Surgical Critical Care at Madigan Army Medical Center, as well as the Director of Surgical Research. And Dr. Wright is the Director of the University of Washington Hernia Center. Dr. Wright, Dr. Martin, thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Thanks, Jason. Glad to be here.
So I think we're going to start things off with Dr. Martin. He's going to take the first opening statement, and he, again, being pro-antibiotic. Dr. Martin.
All right. And I'll start off with a disclaimer. I don't have a Twitter handle, but I do have a fax number if anybody wants to fax me some comments. So this is a great debate topic, and we're talking about this trial, but really we're talking about the bigger question of how we treat appendicitis and whether antibiotics alone is sufficient. So the study, the APAC randomized clinical trial, came out in JAMA. It generated a bunch of media publicity, like this just fell to earth and is the first time, you know, many people have heard of this or think it's been studied. So the first thing to realize is this comes on a background of multiple prior prospective randomized trials, meta-analysis, systematic analyses that have pretty much demonstrated that this approach is safe. One of the big conflicts with prior studies or criticisms was that they weren't large enough to really tell you if it's safe or not. But we do know that this approach works. It works in the majority of patients. So this was a study out of Finland. They looked at six Finnish hospitals. It's, again, as you said, it's a prospective, multi-center, randomized, open-label, non-inferiority trial, which is a mouthful in and of itself, over about a three-year period. And they actually enrolled a very good sample size, 530 patients, although that was slightly short of what they set in their initial power analysis goal. But on their post-power analysis, they felt that this was an adequate sample size. And these were all adults, so we can't really say anything about children from this study. But they randomized them who had confirmed CT scan appendicitis without complicating factors that would be an abscess or a fecalith or appendicolith or other complicated features to either antibiotics only or standard appendectomy. And it's also important to note the majority of those were open appendectomies. And their standard therapy was with a broad-spectrum intravenous antibiotic, ertapenem, for 3 days, so this was at least a three-day hospital stay, which is mandated by their protocol, followed by a week of oral levofloxacin and Flagyl. They randomized the patients. They ended up with 273 in the surgical group and 257 in the antibiotic group, And the big take-home message is that, as expected, surgery removed the problem. The appendix was removed in all but one patient. But on the antibiotic group, the overall failure, in other words, those who needed to proceed to appendectomy either early during that hospitalization or within the first year, was about 27%. So again, as with prior studies, this confirmed in the majority of patients, antibiotics alone was successful. The patients who then required appendectomy had generally uncomplicated appendectomies, and many of the outcome measures, such as pain scores, overall complication rate, et cetera, were again superior in the antibiotics alone group. Of interest, this is actually, if you look at it technically, this is a negative study. This failed to meet their non-inferiority criteria, which they had set at 24%, and they were over that at 27%. But it's interesting that even despite that, and it would be have been easy to spin this is a negative study, there's been a lot of media attention, and most of that has been we need to relook at how we handle appendicitis, and antibiotics alone appears to be a very good option, which just I think goes back to people understanding the big picture and overall gestalt of this, even though technically this is a negative study.
Excellent. Dr. Wright.
Perfect. So I guess I don't have to go over the data since I think the data is not so much in question. I think the big issue is in the interpretation of the data and what it really means for our practice, whether we're a surgeon or whether we're a family doc or emergency doc or seeing these patients on the front line. And I think the issue isn't to me what is safe, because I think this study does demonstrate the safety of an antibiotics first approach. I think it's really what is the best patient-centered initial treatment for appendicitis. And the things that concern me about the antibiotic first treatment, number one is I would say a 27% failure rate at 1 year is actually very high. If you ask me what I want as a patient, I would want a definitive answer and a definitive cure and not have to worry about it. They had a fair number of patients that had an appendectomy at the initial hospitalization, but actually 55 of their patients had recurrent antibiotics within the first year, and we don't really know what that follow-up is at 3 or 5 years. The other big thing to me is their hospital length of stay is actually longer in their antibiotics group, and that's even in the setting of a primarily open appendectomy. When I do a lap appy, most patients are out of the hospital the same day. Or the next morning and back to work within a week. So I think that your recovery may actually be faster in a laparoscopic appendectomy group. And then the last point that really concerns me is in their study, they had 1.5% or 4 patients that actually had tumors found in the surgical group. If you figure a 1.5 rate of tumor and you're treating most patients with an antibiotic first approach, you're going to miss some folks who have an early adeno or early neuroendocrine tumor that you might be able to intervene on before. So I would agree that antibiotics first is potentially safe, but I would submit that appendectomy first is actually a better patient-centered treatment.
All right, so we're going to allow a couple minutes now for each participant to have a rebuttal of the other's opening statements. So, Dr. Martin, your rebuttal?
Sure. So the first issue, obviously, is the failure rate. And I think Andrew hits it right on the head. You know, the easy way to criticize this is, well, 27% failure rate. And again, that's not with 10 years of follow-up. That's only with a year. You also have to look at what those failures were, and would those actually be failures in the clinical setting? Now, we have to remember they very well specified the entry criteria and how the antibiotics or surgery was done, but then after that, the decision or calling something a failure was completely not protocolized in this study. This was simply at the discretion of whoever was managing the patient, and in fact, if you listen to the interviews with the study authors, you know, they said that was actually a problem because there were many surgeons who didn't really accept this approach. And I think we all know, you know, what can often happen in these. They come in and the next day they're already against this approach, and patient says, well, I still have a little right lower quadrant pain. Okay, we're taking your appendix out. Mm-hmm. So I don't think these 27% were true failures if you really had a strict definition of failure. And it's much higher than several other studies that have looked at places that have embraced this approach and actually had a protocolized approach to calling something a failure. Of course, and then not only in the initial hospitalization, but now throughout that first year after surgery, you know, anyone who comes in and says, oh, I'm having right lower quadrant pain, okay, it's probably your appendix, let's take it out. Is that a failure? I don't know. But interestingly, when they looked at those appendix that were taken out as failures, you know, a significant number of them had either mild appendicitis or signs of inflammation, and some of them were negative appendectomies. So that 27 failure rate, I think, is the highest, about the highest you would see. The other obvious, and I think he brings up a great point, Andrew, with the lap versus open and the length of stay and the complications, it definitely would have been somewhat lower with the laparoscopic approach. The length of stay in the antibiotic group here was much higher than in other studies because the protocol mandated 3 days of IV antibiotics. One of the best studies to look at on this is actually the NOTA study out of Italy. And this wasn't a randomized study. This was just a prospective observational where they used best clinical judgment and said, let's see what this looks like in the real world. And what they found is their failure rate was actually about 12 to 14%. Their length of stay was less than 12 hours, and that was with immediately putting the patients on oral antibiotics. So I think looking at a real world approach to this, your length of stays for the antibiotics would be very short. In fact, most of them can be managed as an outpatient, just like uncomplicated diverticulitis, and the failure rates will be much lower than what we've seen in this study.
Excellent. Dr. Wright, do you have any other thoughts or any response to anything Dr. Martin just said?
Sure. So I think that the point you made about the failure rate being a clinical decision and is a good one. And as he said, not all of the appendixes that came out eventually really had appendicitis. And it does give the question, can appendicitis be treated like diverticulitis, where you may have several rounds of antibiotics before you finally call it a failure and move on to surgery? I think the difference, though, between appendicitis and diverticulitis is that the complications and the recovery from a lap appy are so benign compared to, say, a lap sigmoid colectomy, which is has a significantly higher complication rate. You know, their complication rate in this study was 20% in the surgical group, which I have to say is quite high and I think reflects the fact it was a primarily open approach. The other point I would make is about the NOTA trial that he brings up, and I have to go back and look at it to remind myself, but I believe that study did not require imaging as part of their diagnosis of appendicitis. And I will say one strength of the current Finnish trial is that these were truly uncomplicated appendicitis as confirmed by CT imaging. I think the antibiotics group in the Italian study was biased a little bit because they probably were diagnosing some folks who didn't really have appendicitis in the first place.
Right.
Yeah. So let me real quick, he's absolutely right. Yeah. The NOTA study, it was clinical diagnosis. One of the things that's interesting in this study, though, the APAC study, is their negative appendectomy rate was 16%,
right?
Which is, seems a little high to me for a mandatory CT-based diagnosis. I mean, that's significantly higher than most of the CT studies for a diagnosis of appendicitis. So I actually think their negative appendectomy rate was pretty close to what you would assume it is for any of the studies that look at clinical diagnosis only of appendicitis. But that's a great point. When you look at the studies that don't rely on a good diagnostic test like a CT, they're going to be giving antibiotics to some patients that don't have appendicitis, so their recurrence rates will look lower.
Yeah, just to clarify, their negative appy rate, they reported all of the appendectomies in their six hospitals during the study period, which was about 4,000 appendectomies. And in that group, the negative appy rate was 16%. In the trial group, however, the negative appy rate was 0.7%.
Mm. Okay, and they didn't really clarify whether they did routine CT scanning for those all 4,000 appendectomies. I don't think.
Yeah, no, they don't outside of the protocol. In the protocol, they did require CT.
So what do you make of the decision to do these all via an open approach? How did does anybody have an idea how they came about that, or why they would do that, and how that might affect how we interpret this data?
Well, I think they probably had many surgeons. They wanted as many patients as possible. They had many surgeons who did open appies and didn't necessarily do lap appies. So to maximize their enrollment, you know, everybody does open and lap in their hospitals. Many of them, however, did not do lap but did open. So to maximize their recruitment and their participation of surgeons, I think that would be my guess. I haven't spoken to the authors personally. And the other thing that's interesting, they did have some lap appies mm-hmm. in their series, even though they said it was open appies, but that was a very small percent.
Yeah, I actually read an interview with the authors. I didn't talk to them myself, but I read an interview that they wanted to make this open appy to make it more globally applicable, which may be true because there are certainly countries where lap appy is not the standard, but I think it makes it less applicable to developed countries like the U.S.
Yeah,
definitely. So I'd like to address this towards Dr. Martin. The study used ertapenem, clearly not an antibiotic, and in the states that we'd use for first line appendicitis or diverticulitis. What antibiotic would you consider using, and would you go straight to oral antibiotics for these uncomplicated patients if they were in your hands?
I think an IV dose, if you're presenting to the emergency room, an IV dose is fine to get them started, one dose. And then they can transition to oral antibiotics. Again, going back to the NOTA study, they used Augmentin. I think that's a reasonable choice. A fluoroquinolone, I think, would also be a reasonable choice. But especially if you're using CT diagnosis, you know, and you have that CT that clearly shows this is mild early appendicitis and the patient's tolerating PO, there's no reason to put them on prolonged intravenous antibiotics.
To add on to that, are you going to need to see randomized prospective data on oral antibiotics? Because, I mean, that's the critical point in this study is if we're doing 3 days of IV antibiotics for these patients, you know, the lap appy is probably going to win out in the cost and the length of hospital stay. What is it going to take for you to start treating your patients with what kind of data are you going to need to use oral antibiotics like the IV dose and then the oral antibiotics?
Well, I guess, first of all, I'm not sure what you mean about the lap appy would win out. You mean the lap appy would win out versus open, or it would win out versus antibiotics?
As far as cost goes, because right now you're talking about the cost of a lap appy going home within 24 hours versus the cost of keeping a patient in the hospital for 3 days on IV antibiotics.
And a week of antibiotics after.
Oh yeah. Keeping them in for 3 days. Yeah, that's a loser. That's a loser. But I mean, pretty much every study that has looked at this, the cost is definitely cheaper for the antibiotic alone approach, you know, unless you mandate something, you know, like 72-hour admission. You know, if you do it, and again, like I said, there have been multiple prospective randomized studies on this, several of them using laparoscopic appendectomy, several of them in children, and most of them using a very short course of IV followed by oral, you know, 12 to 24 hours. And I think using that approach, you're on very solid ground doing that, and definitely your cost will be lower. At least looking at, you know, that admission or the duration of treatment for that pathology.
I have a question for Dr. Wright. There's a really great podcast, and we'll actually put this on our website by one of the JAMA editors who actually goes through the history of appendicitis, and he talks to the point that, you know, we have very little evidence for our surgical treatment of appendicitis throughout the past 115 years that we've been treating it. And he makes the point that uncomplicated appendicitis is a completely different disease process than perforated appendicitis and likely does not progress on to perforated appendicitis, which is generally the thought and the rationale behind doing the laparoscopic appendectomy for these early uncomplicated appendicitis. So Dr. Wright, do you agree with that opinion? Do you have any thoughts on that point that he made?
Yeah, I think that there probably is a difference, and the data is clearly shown in other studies that patients who present with uncomplicated appendicitis don't transition to complicated appendicitis during their hospitalization. So I think that, you know, there have been lots of studies looking at delay to operating room that really show no difference in the first few days. So So I think that's a fair point. I will say there was a comment, I think, by L.V. Selps on Twitter that the one thing the study definitively shows is you don't need to take a patient to the OR at 3 o'clock in the morning anymore, which I certainly agree with.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to return briefly to something you had mentioned, Dr. Wright, which is the incidence of having an undiagnosed tumor in the appendix or the risk of malignancy. To Dr. Martin, do you think this is a legitimate concern? And are these patients that we treat non-operatively, should we be following up with a colonoscopy or with a repeat CT scan? Or how should we follow those patients?
Yeah, I mean, that's a hard question to answer. And the best answer is we really don't know from this study. I mean, that's something that would take thousands and thousands of patients because those tumors are relatively rare. None of those few tumors they found in this study, you know, were malignant or needed to come out. But that's a good point. Could you miss a tumor, you know, a rare tumor here or there? Sure. But you could argue that for any pathology. You know, again, you could make the same argument for diverticulitis. We don't take out all sigmoids because of that 1 in 1,000, you know, or 10,000 chance of some tumor that was missed on CT and colonoscopy, if you do colonoscopy. But should everyone have a colonoscopy when they get non-op treatment of this? I don't think so. I think I would base that on their age group and other risk factors. Again, and if they've had a good quality CT scan, if there's a, you know, a mass of any significant size, most of those will get picked up on a CT scan. But it's a valid point. You certainly could miss an early tumor with this approach that you might have identified with routine appendectomy.
Dr.
Yeah, I'll add to that I think that it's rare, but I've seen twice in my career unexpected tumor during what I thought was going to be a routine appy. One was a carcinoid, and the other was actually turned out to be an adenocarcinoma in the tip, which then we subsequently took the patient back for a right hemicolectomy. So I do think that it's a rare but real finding. And in the setting of diverticulitis, most of those patients are going to get a colonoscopy eventually. And I think it's undefined if we need to do a colonoscopy on somebody after antibiotic-treated appendicitis. The data may show that later, and I think we'll need more patients. But certainly if I had an older age group patient or a patient where I was concerned, I think I would follow them up down the road.
Great. So with more and more evidence coming out supporting medical management as being safe, who should the ER, what do you guys foresee in the future the ER is going to call when the radiology calls back and says this is uncomplicated appendicitis in the middle of the night? Should they be calling the medicine team, or should this be a surgeon, you know, always evaluated disease process? Are we going to call the surgeon in the middle of the night just to say yes, give them antibiotics type of scenario?
Well, I can just say that if you look at this study, one thing that doesn't get talked about much, they screened over 1,300 patients, and they had to exclude over 800 just to get the folks in the uncomplicated group for this study. Now, some of those were screened out because they presumably didn't have appendicitis. Some of them were screened out because they had complicated appendicitis. I think they said it was about 330 folks that were complicated. So who's going to make that determination? And I still think right now it should be the surgeon that makes that determination.
Yeah, and that's again a good question. It's going to depend on your setting and the reliability of, you know, your emergency department physicians and what your local policies are going to be. You know, if your local policy is going to still lean towards surgery, obviously they'll be calling you. If you're pretty comfortable with the antibiotics only treatment and the ED staff are pretty comfortable and knowledgeable about how to differentiate that complicated from uncomplicated, then I think it's very reasonable for them to put them on antibiotics and send them out and with a return visit either in the ED or, you know, with the surgeon in the surgery clinic. You know, one of the problems with a randomized trial, and this actually doesn't get discussed enough, is that it really doesn't replicate clinical decision making, right? You have to make it a pretty simple dichotomy so they get lumped into one of two groups. And that's not how we manage patients. We look at a bunch of factors. So, you know, so they used a very simple dichotomy of you know, were they perforated with an abscess or with an appendicolith? And if they weren't, then everything got lumped into this uncomplicated. But I think we all know there's a CT scan you look at and you say, I can't even see appendicitis, you know, and radiology is calling it an inflammation. And then they're the ones you see that are like, oh yeah, that's a bad appendicitis. You know, let's go to the OR. Mm-hmm. So that additional decision-making, and that's called therapeutic misassignment or malassignment. When you take out that clinical decision-making from a randomized trial. So actually, I think it's very important to also look at the prospective observational studies where you're able to keep in that clinical judgment. And again, going back to the NOTA study, or there's a Kaiser study by Anna Kaminsky with 33,000 patients. And with good clinical decision-making, the outcome measures are all significantly better than what we saw in this study. So again, you know, be wary about saying these are going to be the results we're going to get, extrapolating those from a randomized trial, because it takes that clinical decision making out. And in many cases, it forces you to do something the opposite of what you would do. Mm-hmm. So you see a bad CT, you know, that you know is bad appendicitis, but by their criteria, it's uncomplicated. You know, they're forced to put them into the antibiotics group when you probably never would have done that as a surgeon for an individual patient. So again, be wary of that and look at both the prospective observational data that reflects more real world practice and the randomized trial data.
To add to that, I would say that there's a lot of bias that's brought into the examination room, whether it's by the surgeon or by the emergency room doc, and that can really inform the patient's decision making. So if a surgeon comes in and says, yeah, it's appendicitis, we have to take it out, they're going to get surgery. If somebody comes in and says, you know, the New York Times just said you don't need surgery anymore and all you need is antibiotics, then they're going to get antibiotics. Yeah. So I think we have to be very careful when we do our informed consent. It's not just informed consent for surgery, but it's informed consent that really goes over the risks and benefits of both approaches. One of my partners, Gianna Davidson, is actively doing some work looking at what really are the patient-centered outcomes. It's not just the failure rate, but it's things like pain, it's things like return to work, even things like anxiety, and what really matters to the patient. And then you have to give the patient that information and help them choose instead of making the decision for them.
Yeah, and even though Andrew's on the complete wrong side of this debate, that's a great point. He started off with, you know, the we need to have patient-centered focus. So I've seen a lot of discussion on this of we should be doing appendectomies or we should be doing antibiotics only. And it's no, we shouldn't be doing either of those. We should be saying to the patient, here's the data. And we have very good data to tell you, here's what's going to happen if we do antibiotics only, or here's what your chances are. Here's what's going to happen if we do surgery. And in the end, the choice is up to them. I think this helps us now feel a lot more comfortable discussing the antibiotics only side, and, you know, and telling them, well, here's the realities. And if this happens, here's the next step. And here's your chances of needing to come back and have an emergent appendectomy.
Go ahead.
I told the guys when they invited me on the podcast that I was not going to be the most dogmatic debater, because actually ever since the NOTA trial came out, I've given antibiotics alone as an option to my patients. So I was a fairly early adopter. That being said, I have yet to have one patient actually take me up on the antibiotic side of things. So I've been presenting them with the data, but they pretty much want surgery. I think that perhaps reflects not just my own bias, but the bias in the general populace.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've had several who have jumped on the antibiotics only. Obviously, in the military, this has been used for, you know, anybody on a Navy sub who's gotten appendicitis. They can tell you antibiotics work. But yeah, you're exactly right. It's going to depend on the patient. But I think we've been heavily biased towards appendectomy, and we can certainly back off of that a little. I had the real world experience with this myself. I was in Kauai at a meeting, and guess who started having abdominal pain in the right lower quadrant? My wife. We went into the emergency room on Kauai, and she is obviously very nervous, this little hospital in Kauai, and she wanted to do antibiotics only. Unfortunately, her CT scan was one of those where, you know, it wasn't perforated, but we looked at it and I said, absolutely not. That's bad appendicitis. And, you know, she had her appendectomy, which wasn't, you know, wasn't pain-free, and, you know, wasn't wasn't no problem for her. She was down for a good week or two, but took care of the problem. But if it was an early appendicitis, she definitely would have considered antibiotics. In fact, that was her preferred route.
You know, it's funny you bring up travel. When I talk about patient-centered, it's important to note that it's unique to the individual patient. And perhaps one of the reasons I'm biased towards appendectomy is I do travel a lot. And I would rather get my appendix out when I'm at home and I know where the surgeons are than be traveling. I travel to Ethiopia. I travel internationally. And I don't want to be somewhere where I don't have good health care and then run into trouble.
You know, that brings up an interesting point, Dr. Martin, specifically for your patient population and the active duty young military population who right now they may have early appendicitis, but they're certainly a mobile group. They certainly find themselves in austere environments pretty frequently. Would that change how you would counsel a patient if they're somebody who, you know, a couple years down the road might be somewhere where they're not so amenable to getting a simple lap appy or antibiotics?
Oh yeah, for the active duty military,
yeah,
who is in a deployable,
yeah,
position, then I would lean heavily towards surgery for that person. Although most of the places they deploy to, you know, they're going to have rapid access to a surgeon and an appendectomy if they need it. The most common case besides blown up extremities I did in 4 deployments in Iraq and Afghanistan was an appendectomy. Mm. Of course, it was an open appendectomy, which, you know, you go back and try and remember how to do an open appendectomy since it's been so long. But that's a good point. And those soldiers who are going to deploy to some of those environments, yeah, that's somebody who I would say just get your appendix out now and get it out of the picture.
So looking forward then, if you guys were to design the next study looking at this topic, what kind of study do you want to see? What kind of antibiotic? You know, how do you want to see the patients randomized? What would be your ideal study to answer this question definitively?
So I've been talking a lot with my partners, Gianna Davidson and Dave Flum, who are actually working on this. They have a PCORI grant that's been submitted. They're waiting to hear their score. But the randomization would be between antibiotics, and it's similar to what you mentioned, you know, one dose in the ER and then go home on oral antibiotics. I believe they used Zosyn and then followed by Augmentin. And then the other side, lap-appy, but the real outcomes are not just the failure rate, but patient satisfaction. And they're measuring that return to work. They're measuring that as in terms of pain. Because if you are okay with, you know, a 27% failure rate with a salvage being pretty safe of appendectomy, that may be okay. On the other hand, if that means, you know, it takes you 3 weeks before you're back to work, that may not be okay. So it's really those patient level outcomes that I think are the critical point to look at.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily even think we need another randomized study of asking that question. You know, is antibiotics alone a safe approach, or what are the outcomes and failure rates? If we have a specific question like, is outpatient management of these fine versus admission for a period, that would be reasonable. But I think we need some prospective observational studies of implementing these in actual practice and following the patients closely and confirming that their outcomes are what we've seen in the more controlled settings. And you know, once you have that, I think you can feel very comfortable implementing these. The other thing that I've noticed is, and was interesting in this study, was one of the concerns was, well, you're going to have a group of patients that you put on antibiotics, they're going to fail. And now you're going to be doing this appendectomy, you know, 3 days in, 5 days into a failure, and it's going to be a mess. Mm-hmm. But actually, if you look at their outcomes and the patients who failed, who had an appendectomy, their complication rate was much lower than the patients who had an upfront appendectomy, which I think goes into another argument of doing the antibiotics alone approach, is because even in the patients who fail, they've already been cooled off somewhat by the antibiotics, and it seems to make the procedure easier or less complicated. And I think I've seen that in my practice. Again, like Andrew said, you know, we no longer need to do these in the middle of the night, and so I'll admit them, put them on antibiotics. And I remember I used to do a whole bunch of very tough appies in the middle of the night, And now it's very rare. When, you know, I'll do them during the day. They'll have gotten 12, 24 hours of antibiotics. And I have no controlled data to support this, but my bias has been, you know, they start to get cooled off with the antibiotics, and it's made my appendectomy easier. So I think that's again, my observation, maybe, a study to try and quantify that. The other question would be, should we be treating, even if you don't buy the antibiotics alone and that appendix needs to come out, shouldn't we give everyone a trial of antibiotics up front? And if they get better, but you still believe they should have had surgery, then you do an elective interval appendectomy. Again, in a completely non-infective, non-inflamed field.
Right.
That is what I think would absolutely minimize your complications to about the lowest you could get.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting that this, we keep talking about the uncomplicated appy, but I'm actually much more likely to use an antibiotics first approach in the complicated appy. Those folks that have an abscess that you can drain or a phlegmon you can get to cool off. I think it's a lot easier to do those appendectomies later. And then I think there's a big question, do you bring them back in 6 weeks for an interval appy, or do you just leave it alone? And I don't think that anybody has the answer to that question.
Yeah, and that's one that probably the best study, again, is that Anna Kaminsky study from Kaiser. And they had 1,000 patients that they managed that way. And almost 900 of them, they didn't do an interval appy. And at least by their data, they had a 5% recurrence at 4 years. So that's also, but that's obviously a separate patient population. That's the one where you don't want to go into up front. You know that's going to be an ugly appendectomy and high risk of complications. You definitely want to drain that abscess and cool them off. But whether to do the interval appy, that's still another question that's out there. Exactly.
I think just completely without data, that's a patient, somebody with a phlegmon, it's a little bit difficult to interpret the imaging. If you decide to treat them non-operatively, then I think that I would either rescan them or get a colonoscopy, because you want to make sure there's not a mass hiding in the base of that.
Yeah, and of course, the other question that's still left open, at least in my mind, is the long-term follow-up for this. You know, we have data at a year from the study. Roughly a quarter are going to fail, but if we follow these patients out to 5 years and that number is 75%, then I think we'd be having a different conversation.
Yeah, and we have some, the longest follow-up I've seen has been about 4 to 5 years. It seems like almost all the recurrences happen within the first year, and definitely by 3 or 4 years, but that's a great point. The ultimate test of this is going to be the 20-year follow-up, and is everyone needing their appendix out eventually?
Right.
I think it also may depend on the natural history is going to depend on your patient population. And if you're seeing mostly young folks, pediatric folks, that's probably very different. I tend to see a lot of older folks in our practice because all the kids go over to the children's hospital. So, is an 18-year-old the same as a 50-year-old with appendicitis? And should your level of concern about some other etiology be higher in the older patient population?
Yeah. Well, that's great. Yeah, I think, with this is no exception. With all good studies, it usually raises more questions than it answers. So I think we're certainly seeing that with this. That about covers it. Do you guys have any final closing thoughts, Dr. Wright, Dr. Martin?
I think the question that was discussed a little bit earlier of, is this a completely different disease process? The mild appendicitis versus the complex or perforated appendicitis. We used to think that it was all a progression, and I think we still teach that a lot. But I think the data is pretty solidly on the sign of these are different, not necessarily different disease processes, but a spectrum of a disease, kind of like Crohn's disease, where we know we have inflammatory Crohn's, we have fistulizing Crohn's, we have fibrotic stenosing Crohn's, and they generally don't cross over much, and they stay in those categories. And I think that's what we're seeing with appendicitis, is we have the complicated perforating appendicitis. We have the mild inflammatory appendicitis, and then we have that middle ground group. And I think being able to accurately sort them out into which group they are is really going to be the key to what's the optimal therapy and counseling them on what's their chances of success, failure, and long-term recurrence.
Dr. Wright, any closing thoughts?
My I think I would summarize, and I think I actually agree more than disagree on a lot of things. But my closing thought would be that these studies, this study, the NOTA study, other studies show that antibiotics first in the selected patient is safe. The question is, what should be the default strategy? And I think that really is an individual discussion that you have to have with your patient.
Yeah, and a note for the any future authors, don't publish your study with a double negative conclusion.
Very.
You know, this did not show negative non-inferiority. I mean, had my head spinning, and I read studies. So you know, the lay public trying to say, well, what does that mean? It's not non-inferiority.
Great point.
I think we definitely could be a little clearer as medical professionals and you know, getting the clear message out. And again, even though this was technically a negative study, you know, the press out of it has been almost uniformly on the antibiotic, we need to rethink this side.
Yeah.
Which I think is interesting in how these studies get spun.
Well, I think it's interesting because you didn't see a similar thing after the NOTA trial or other things where you could have made the same headlines.
Well, and after this debate, I mean, it's clearly going to be uniformly on the antibiotic side, right?
The other thing, just speaking of statistics, getting a little bit, putting my nerd hat on, when they picked their target, so they picked this target of 24% conversion rate, that was a completely arbitrary target that was based entirely on that's what happened in the other literature that they reviewed. So they picked their target not based on any objective clinical outcome or any, you know, patient-centered data. They just picked what the best literature was and said, can we meet that? And I think that's a little bit of an odd way to set your target when you're setting up a study.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I mean, the setup, it was like, okay, we know what you're going to find. You know, we know appendectomy is 100% or as close as it can be to removing the appendix or taking it out of the equation. And antibiotics don't remove the appendix, so it's not out of the equation. You know, so that was no earth-shattering finding. So it was a little bit of an odd endpoint. And again, as Andrew mentions, we definitely want to look at more patient-centered outcomes, length of stay, pain, disability, et cetera. Some of the other studies have actually, I think, looked at very well.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Martin, if we went with your approach, at least in my training institution, really the only case as chief residents that we get to do in the middle of the night now with autonomously is the laparoscopic appendectomy for the uncomplicated case. How do you think this will play out for the training of residents?
Yeah, and that's a whole separate issue that I think bears discussion. Now, I think a lot of that we tend not to discuss openly because there is the training issue. And appendectomy, open or laparoscopic, is a great training case for junior residents to learn on. As you mentioned, that's one where we let our chiefs be relatively autonomous, although we're one of the few programs left that does that. So I'll say at most programs, because we're doing a study looking at this that I've talked to, the chiefs never operate without staff in the room. But in our setting, yeah, it's a great case. It's a great case for the juniors to do. It's a great case for the chiefs to actually serve as a junior staff. And let's face it, we're going to decrease the number of those procedures if we adopt this. And it's not going to result in, you know, some more challenging cases down the road, which was one of the concerns. So there is a potential for a real impact. And look at the number of appendectomies that are done across the U.S. and then decrease that by 75%, and you'll see the impact on training. You know, that's only one case, and will that have any effect on the ultimate product that comes out of general surgery residency? I just don't know. But I think that's definitely a discussion that we need to be having. And that should feature into this debate. And that's one, because our institution is about to enter into one of these studies looking at that. And that's one of the big discussions we had of well, are we prepared to lose all these, you know, cases that we think are very good training tools?
So I'll go a step further. There is fairly good evidence based on NISQIP data that elective cases that are started in the evening or the night have worse outcomes than elective cases done during the daytime. And I would say that this data, whether you believe in surgery first or antibiotics first, clearly shows that appendicitis can be treated semi-urgently and just should really never be done in the middle of the night in an uncomplicated case. So I would say there's really no reason to do this in the middle of the night. There's no reason to do it without an attending present. And you really should treat this just like every other operation. So I do think it's going to affect resident experience and resident outcome, but I think it's probably safer for the patient to do it at 10 o'clock in the morning than 3 o'clock in the morning.
But Andrew, what do you think about just the effect of losing that however many, you know, thousands of appendectomies are done every year? Do you think that's going to have any real impact on ultimate resident training?
It depends. You could have said the same thing about the fact that PPIs came along in the, you know, 70s and 80s, and now all of a sudden we have to take away all the vagotomies and antrectomies that my professors used to talk about and that I've never done. So does the landscape of surgery change with time? Sure. If we lose a lot of appendectomies, we just have to find some other way to fill our time.
Yeah, I guess until there's an effective pill for obesity, we're going to be just fine on case numbers.
There's always trauma, and since I run our hernia center, there's always hernia. I don't see a pill for hernias coming up anytime soon. Yeah.
Well, and there's all those incisional hernias from the open appies from Finland.
Yeah, exactly.
No matter what your take, patients are going to be coming to you, you know, with their little news article or even that study in their palm and saying, hey, you know, this says I don't need my appendix out.
Right.
So yeah, everybody needs to have at least a response ready for that.
I think it was the front page of the New York Times health section last week sometime. So, yeah, patients are going to be asking about it.
Well, the New York Times has this habit on Twitter of popular articles they keep tweeting and retweeting and retweeting. And it seems like about every 5 or 6 hours they're tweeting that article. So I think it's something that will be getting a lot of traffic.
Well, that's good. That's good. All right. Well, thank you both, Dr. Wright, Dr. Martin, for joining us on our first ever Behind the Knife debate. It was a lot of fun and a good discussion, a great discussion. Thank you very much.
Perfect. Have a great afternoon.
All right. Thanks, guys. Take care.
All right. Bye. All right. And that does it for us. Thanks once again for joining us on our first ever Behind the Knife debate. It was a lot of fun, and I certainly learned a lot.
And we hope to have many more of these. So if you guys have any ideas of other debates you want to hear, especially on a hot topic, we'll really try and find some experts in the field and turn this out for you like we did this time.
And be sure you check out our intern lecture, which is should be now posted. July 1st is rapidly approaching. And there's some really good information in there for all the incoming interns.
And if you guys can go on iTunes and give us a star review or give us an actual written review, it really helps us out.
Until next time, thank you for joining us on Behind the Knife, the surgery podcast. Dominate the day.